everyone. I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And you're listening to Key to the Case. Thank you, everyone, for all of your continued support. We really appreciate those of you who have been listening to since the beginning, who have listened to every episode. But also, if you're just joining now for the first time, we really appreciate you as well. So thank you. I don't have a whole lot else to say today. So are you ready to get into today's case?
Yeah. And if you aren't already, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast, or you can email us keytothecase@gmail.com. Give us a 5-star review. That's very much appreciated. But yeah, I'm ready to get into it.
Yeah, I will add that the 5-star reviews are really helpful to us. I don't necessarily know that it plays into the charts or anything, but it helps us and encourages us to keep doing what we're doing. So thank you. Dr. Sunao Saito was born on December 13th, 1949, making him 46 years old at the time of his murder. I struggled to find much information about his early life, but he was born and raised in Japan. Sunao had quite an impressive educational background. In 1974, he obtained his master's degree from the Institute for Virus Research at Kyoto University in Japan, as well as his PhD from the same university a few years later in 1977. Upon graduation, he moved to Paris, where he worked at the Pasteur Institute as a postdoctoral researcher. And he spent several years working there, but by 1982, he made a big decision and accepted an opportunity to be an associate at the Howard Hughes Medical Institute at Columbia University in New York. So not only did this equate to progression in his career, but also a big move to the U.S., so it's not 100% clear, but I presume that Sunao was already married or dating who would become his wife at that point during the move. The reason I believe that is because his daughter, who is sadly also a victim in this case, was 13 years old at the time of this case, which would mean she was born in 1983. So I think he moved to the U.S. with his wife and they had their daughter shortly after. It's reported that he obtained permanent resident status in the U.S., Sunao spent a few years at Columbia, but by 1985, the University of California at San Diego was actively seeking him out and eventually recruited him as a professor in the Department of Neuroscience. And he would go on to conduct research in the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. His research was centered around understanding how nerve cells in the brains of those who suffer from Alzheimer's are depleted throughout the various stages of the disease. All of his colleagues remarked how significant his research was and how his findings were seemingly on the verge of determining the cause and possible cure to Alzheimer's. One remark I was impressed with from a colleague was, quote, "One of the distinguishing features of Dr. Saito's research was his desire to investigate previously unexamined questions. One of his favorite responses to colleagues when asked why he had not studied a particular problem was, others are already doing it," end quote. So I think that kind of philosophy is important, especially with Alzheimer's, where to this day, there is no cure and the cause isn't fully understood. I personally have seen the effects of this disease. My grandfather was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 5 to 6 years ago, and it's terrible. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone. It's a truly horrible disease. As I was researching this case, there was definitely not a shortage of kind words used to describe Sunao. He was characterized as being a personable and engaged professor. His students explained that he always made time for them and that he was quite considerate. He sounds like one of those professors you would remember more distinctly than others. Colleagues described him as a wonderful man who was intelligent, dedicated, warm, caring, diligent, and sophisticated in his tastes. His wife said, quote, "He always wanted to make a contribution to the public and to the world. That's the reason why he was always working so hard to study Alzheimer's disease," end quote. He was internationally known as well. He won several international awards in his time, and it seems likely he would have gone on to win more. There is another victim in this case who I briefly mentioned earlier, and that is Sunao's daughter, Luli, who was 13 at the time of her death. And she was an impressive kid, which isn't all that shocking because of who her father was, but she was also her own person, of course. She was involved in her school's band. She would act as an interpreter and host when Japanese exchange students would tour her school. She collaborated with teachers to start a Japanese language program for the entire school district, and she was known to spend a lot of time in the school library. She was described as a good kid and a good friend who would often help other students with their homework. It's clear, just like her father, Luli left a lasting impression on those who knew her, and she was a high achiever.
Yeah, even at 13, it seemed like she was following in her dad's footsteps. You know, she was obviously highly intelligent. She was a high achiever. You know, most 13-year-olds wouldn't be doing what she's doing. Yeah, it's a shame that both of them fell victim to this crime, because it seemed like both, obviously Dr. Saito had already achieved a lot, but it seemed like Luli was going to be following in his footsteps.
Right.
And achieving, you know, just as much.
Right. I agree. And he was 46 at the time of his murder, which feels young to me. But then there's Luli, who is much younger. So yeah, it's really depressing to think about. I also mentioned Sunao's wife, and her name is Shizue. I couldn't find a lot of information about her either. And the information I could find about the status of the relationship was conflicting and honestly just unclear. But an Associated Press article about this case reported that Sunao and his wife separated the year prior to his death. I also saw her referred to as his estranged wife in other sources. So it doesn't appear that they had gone through a divorce, but that they may have been separated. I say may have been because Shizue did not speak of him as if they weren't together anymore, and their home was listed in both of their names. So I think it's possible that they were still together. It's just unclear. But ABC 10 News did a segment on this case this year, actually, in February. And when I was watching that segment, I saw a newspaper article about the case flash on the screen that was primarily about Shizue and her reaction to the murder of her family and just some more information about her. I looked at a lot of newspapers for this case, and I could not find a copy of this specific one. I searched far and wide, so I'm just going to share the tidbits of information I could glean from the news video. The article stated that a former neighbor of theirs said that although they lived in the same home, they stayed at opposite ends of the home. This neighbor could see that from inside their own home, but also according to the neighbor, Shizue shared that information as well. Apparently, Shizue would leave for several months at a time, and the neighbor learned from the gardener that she would visit her, quote, second husband in Japan. This neighbor also described her as domineering and overprotective, but it does say the gardener painted a softer image of her. So I know this sounds like a bunch of neighborhood gossip, but it felt wrong to leave it out. I think we just have to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I think all that information is valid because in murder cases, the spouse or the significant other is always the number one suspect before they can get ruled out, right? I think since she was estranged, their relationship was severed, it seemed like. I mean, I think whatever information we can get about her is beneficial because, you know, I haven't heard the whole case yet, but I can't rule her out yet.
Right. And that's why I wanted to share it. I thought the second husband comment was super weird. That doesn't seem like something someone would just make up, but I'm not sure. There were no reports stating that Sunao was seeing anyone else at the time of his murder. The Associated Press article stated that Shizue was from a wealthy Japanese family, which could explain the large and expensive home they owned. But we'll discuss that a little more later. So let's fast forward to May 7th, 1996 in San Diego. There's no information about the day's events until about 10 to 11 p.m. Sunao and his daughter, Luli, spent that evening at his lab where he got some work done and helped Luli with her homework. It's assumed that after leaving the lab between 10 and 11 p.m., the pair headed back to their home, which was located in the affluent neighborhood of La Jolla. It looks like this would be about a 10-minute drive, so not far at all. It's unknown if they made any stops on the way home. At about 1:30 a.m., two young men who were out skateboarding came upon a gruesome scene. They discovered Sunao partially hanging out of his dark blue BMW located in the middle of the street in front of his house with multiple gunshot wounds to his head. They also found Luli still wearing her father's lab coat approximately 20 feet away up the driveway and saw that she had also been shot. So it was evident that she most likely witnessed her father being shot, jumped out of the car, and tried to run up to the house to escape the assailant or assailants, only to be targeted as she ran away. It was later determined that Sunao was shot 4 times in his head, and Luli was shot 3 times, once in the back and twice in the head. Detectives would later learn that some of the neighbors thought they heard gunshots around 11:30 p.m., but they didn't call police, nor did anyone report seeing anything or anyone suspicious in the area. So let's say they did hear gunshots around 11:30. So that's when the murder occurred. It's surprising to me that it took 2 hours for someone to find them. I don't think this is that relevant of a detail, so we don't need to dwell on it, but his car is basically blocking one whole side of the road. You would definitely have to veer around it if you were driving down that street. It's hard to believe that no one drove by for 2 hours, or if they did, they didn't observe the car in the middle of the street and note it as unusual.
Yeah, although it was around midnight on a weekday in a very wealthy neighborhood, I doubt there's much traffic going through that street at that hour that Dr. Saito and his daughter were murdered. Yeah, I don't know. I would doubt there's cars trying to drive around him since it's so late on a weekday.
Yeah, that's a good point. Again, I don't know that that fits into this case at all, but it was hard for me not to be curious about that time difference.
I'm still thinking about what you said about the neighbors hearing gunshots. I'm surprised they didn't, because I'm sure the neighbors that heard them were the closest neighbors to Dr. Saito's house. I'm just kind of wondering why they didn't. Maybe they did look out the window and saw the car and didn't think anything of it, but they would also see Luli on the driveway.
The way these homes are structured, I don't know that they would have been able to look out and immediately have seen them, but I think regardless, it's a little strange to not call 911 when you hear gunshots in that kind of neighborhood, especially. They're probably not hearing gunshots really ever. So to hear what you think are gunshots and then not call, I found that strange.
Yeah, maybe they thought there were gunshots and were like, oh, maybe those weren't gunshots. I don't know, because no one called 911, so.
Yeah, and I also wondered if maybe the next door neighbors weren't home or something, and it was someone farther down the street who heard the gunshots, but it was also 7 shots, not 1 or 2, where you might brush it off, but could also be a situation where the person thought, oh, someone else will call the police, or someone else surely has already called the police. But in looking at Google Earth, the oldest imaging of the house that I could find was from 2007, so 11 years after the murders. It's not a very well-lit road, but somewhat ironically, the one street lamp I could find was right next to the Saito house and right by where his car ended up. So it makes you wonder if that was installed at some point after the murders or if it was always there. But I went quite a distance down the road both ways and didn't see another street lamp in either direction. These are large homes in this area, and they're fairly close together. So it's not like this was some secluded part of La Jolla or anything, but there definitely appear to be a lot of trees and brush around the homes, which provide privacy. And which is why I was kind of thinking, maybe if someone looked out the window, they might not be able to immediately see the scene. And I also point out the brush and trees because I think it's conceivable that someone was lying in wait in that brush and would not be seen by Sunao and Luli as they pulled into the driveway. I didn't fully understand the crime scene until I saw photos. So as I was reading about the case, it sounded more like they pulled into the driveway that is on somewhat of a hill and they're shot there. But what happened was he was shot essentially in the middle of the street because that's where his car was. Or maybe Sunao started to enter the driveway, was shot, and his car rolled backward. And because the driveway was on a hill, it just kind of naturally settled in the street. Early on in the investigation, it was widely reported that investigators thought this was a professional hit, primarily because of the marksmanship. every shot fired landed on either Sunao or Luli. Police really believed this was someone who knew what they were doing, and they thought this could have been someone who was waiting for them to return home to carry out the murders. But in January 1997, about 8 months after the murders, they changed their position. Lieutenant Glenn Breitenstein, who worked this case, said, quote, "We have nothing to indicate it was anything other than a random act of violence. It could have been a street robbery, an attempted carjacking. We just don't know. I don't believe it was a professional hit," end quote. They do still acknowledge it as a possibility, and their general statement is that no one theory has been completely ruled out.
Yeah, I find it weird that they initially said it was, they suspected it was a professional hit, and now they're kind of retracting that and saying, oh, it was just someone random. This doesn't strike me as random. It seems like someone was waiting specifically for Dr. Saito to come home, and it seemed like it was intentional. Who randomly kills someone in a affluent neighborhood, wealthy neighborhood, a doctor who was researching something that was beneficial for all of mankind, you know? It doesn't seem random to me.
Yeah, it doesn't seem random to me either. I suppose the one scenario where it might make sense is if someone wanted to steal his car, but how would they have known he would be home at that time, right? Then it goes back to, it seems like someone was just waiting for him and had some sort of knowledge about when he was going to be home. That's just how it appears.
Yeah, but why kill Luli?
I think most people see her as an unintended victim, right? If someone was targeting Dr. Saito, I don't think they were also targeting Luli. I think most likely she was a victim because her father was a victim.
Yeah, but she was absolutely like executed. Like a shot in the back and then two shots in the head. Just seems way over the top to me.
All of it seems over the top. Four times.
Yeah, true. I mean, four times in the head for Dr. Saito, yeah.
The gun actually is the biggest clue in this murder, though. So at the crime scene, police discovered the shell casings from the murder weapon. And a ballistics analysis revealed that the gun was a Grendel P12 38 caliber semi-automatic handgun. And this is an exceedingly rare handgun because it was only produced from 1991 to 1994. Now, I'll be the first to admit I'm not super knowledgeable about guns, but I did read on a firearm forum that this gun has more recoil than you would typically expect for its size, and it can cause some soreness in the wrist. This gun does look incredibly small to me. It almost seems like something someone might keep in their car or somewhere else just to use for protection, not what I would envision being used in a murder at all.
Yeah, based on that fact, it doesn't seem like it would be a hitman, because I think a hitman would have enough presence of mind to know not to use an exceedingly rare handgun. They would probably use one of the most common handguns out there.
Yeah, and you'd think this person or multiple people might use something like a revolver that wouldn't typically leave behind shell casings or leave behind that kind of evidence. But I got pretty deep into researching this gun, and I even watched a video on YouTube from a guy who has this type of gun. He seems to be a collector of sorts, and seeing it on video made me realize how tiny this gun really is. And he said it's really lightweight. And he also made a comment that made my ears perk up. He says it and shows how the trigger comes pretty far forward. So if you were wearing gloves, it would be nearly impossible to fit your finger in that space. So if this is true, that could mean the perpetrator was not wearing gloves, which would also go against the idea of a hitman entirely, in my mind. I would presume most hitmen wear gloves. He also describes the trigger as gritty and the accuracy as being terrible. This just seems like a really weird gun to use in an intended murder.
Yeah, now I'm kind of rethinking whether this was an actual professional hit or not. If you're as accurate as this guy was with an inherently inaccurate gun, then I guess you're either a professional or you have just a ton of practice shooting this weapon, or maybe this guy even modified it.
Yeah, I think those are all good points. It made me go back and forth in my head as well, because we have kind of conflicting evidence on both sides. Was this person a professional? Were they not? I think I still lean towards they were not, but I see your point. This is not a gun with high accuracy. Then how did they manage to hit Luli and Sunao with every shot they fired? Tony Johnson, who is a senior investigator assigned to this case, reported that, quote, they actually took a team out of rotation and tried to get test fires on every single Grendel in San Diego County, which was a huge, huge undertaking, end quote. This led to nothing, but investigators are hopeful because they do have a partial DNA profile obtained from the shell casings at the scene. It is enough DNA to make a positive match if they have a suspect or person of interest to compare against. But they don't have any suspects, as far as we know. Those closest to the Saitos were completely shocked by the news of Sunao and Luli's murder. They had a hard time imagining why someone would want to harm them. I think it's especially depressing thinking about someone like Sunao losing his life to such a tragedy, because he was someone who was trying to prevent the tragedy that is Alzheimer's, or better, treat it as it progresses. So to have his life cut short makes you think about the what ifs a bit. And poor Luli, to have her life robbed of her at 13, we talked about it a little bit, that there's so much she didn't get to do in life. A briefing was held shortly after the incident where Sunao's wife intended to speak, but she was too traumatized from having to make the positive identification of her husband and daughter. So his brother shared the statement prepared by her through a Japanese interpreter. She said, quote, by having him die in the middle of his life, I'm sure he is sad and disappointed. He always complained that he didn't have enough time. He loved his daughter very much. This is the saddest incident to ever take place in my life, end quote. It's difficult to fathom going through something like this, and to lose two important people in your life at once has to be extremely hard to cope with. So like I said, there are no named persons of interest or suspects in this case, and there never have been. But there are some theories about who could have committed the murders. So you may be wondering where Sunao's wife, Shizue, was when her husband and daughter were killed. And she was actually out of the country, vacationing in Nice, France at the time. Obviously, just based on that fact alone, she couldn't have been directly responsible for the murder of her own family. Now, some people have speculated that if this were a hit, that she may have set it up. But we really have no evidence or data to support that, or even to support that this was a hit at all. It's also noted that she was cooperative with the investigation and answered all questions from police. And we kind of already went through why this gun doesn't make sense for a hitman, but especially doesn't make sense because it was so specific. They were only manufactured for a short period. I also find it really hard to believe that Shizue would have connections and know who to talk to set this up. They lived in San Diego for around 11 years at the time of the murders, but I don't feel like the average person just knows how to set up a hit. Also, if she were to set this up, you would think she would make it abundantly clear that she has a daughter and to not shoot the daughter if she were with him. We do have to consider if there was a financial benefit to his death, but she comes from a well-to-do family, so I think money would have been less of a factor to her than what we may see in other cases. Something I wish we knew in this case is if Sunao staying at the lab late that night with Luli was something he typically did. If it was, then I might be more inclined to think this attack was by someone who knew him and knew his schedule. If he didn't typically go to the lab at this time, I wouldn't necessarily rule out that it was someone who knew him, but it seems less likely that it was.
Yeah, I'm going back to what you said earlier about him researching things that no one else seems to want to research, and he's answering questions through his research that haven't been answered before. He's kind of a pioneer in that aspect. So I'm kind of postulating, and it's, I guess it's kind of conspiratorial, but maybe he was on the verge of something in the field of Alzheimer's cures that didn't involve any sort of pharmaceutical, I don't know what the word would be, intervention or interference or whatever. Maybe he was finding a cure that didn't include any sort of medication that a pharmaceutical company would produce, and they didn't like that he was doing that and they needed to put an end to that. Again, it's kind of a wild conspiracy, but I think it's possible because he was being a pioneer in the Alzheimer's field, right?
Yeah, it does feel a little conspiratorial, but it is another theory in this case. And I think it's a natural theory to go to, especially when much of what we know about Sunao is the work he's done, the research he's done. So your mind kind of wants to go to what we know about him and how it could link to his murder. And interestingly enough, this is what Shizue put forth as the most likely scenario. In that newspaper article that I mentioned earlier from the ABC 10 news report, she suggested that a rival researcher or someone involved with a pharmaceutical company who stood to lose money due to his research could have targeted Sunao. I can see the rival researcher theory, I guess, in what you just mentioned with his work he was doing, if he was potentially working on a treatment that wasn't a pharmaceutical intervention. I guess my question is, how would they know that if they got rid of Sunao, that his colleagues wouldn't pick up where he left off?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I'm sure his lab knew exactly what the objective is for whatever theory he was working on at that point. So yeah, I mean, eliminating him wouldn't really deter the rest of the group from continuing that theory and proving that theory.
Right. I imagine it was all extremely well documented. And some of his colleagues speculated that possibly the murder was committed by a jealous competitor or colleague, which I would lean more that way, but they really consider it unlikely. And I think they would know better than anyone, right? Greg Cole, someone who worked with Sunao, said, he quote, "much to his credit, never tried to take anybody else's ideas. By allowing others to pursue their own ideas, he developed his own original lines of work," end quote. If a known competitor or jealous colleague committed the murders, I'd think there'd be a better chance of this case being solved by testing them against the partial DNA profile that they have.
To me, it's kind of hard to see another scientist committing this type of crime. If you get a degree in a scientific field, you probably have a pretty logical way of seeing the world. I just can't see someone in that field committing this crime and getting away with it. I think they have a more realistic view of the world, and doing this type of thing isn't going to pay off for them or benefit them.
Yeah, I agree. And I go back to, if this were a rival researcher or someone who was known to be jealous of him, I would think this case would be solved by now. It seems like the police could make that link pretty quickly. But it does kind of seem like maybe that kind of person would be the type of person to use this gun that's just kind of random and weird.
Do you know if the police interviewed his colleagues, rival colleagues, other researchers?
Yes, those people were interviewed and seemingly ruled out as suspects or persons of interest. So there isn't much evidence to support this theory that it was a colleague or someone from a pharmaceutical company, but there's no evidence to support any theory, really. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that this is what Shizue thought, or at least at the time, it's what she thought. Nothing appeared to be stolen from the car or the house, and Sunao is found with a large amount of cash and a number of credit cards with him. So there's no direct evidence of a burglary here. Unless when Sunao and Luli arrived home, a burglary was currently in progress in the house, and the person who killed him was a lookout of sorts. They saw him come home and their first instinct was to shoot. Then the gunshots possibly sent a cue to whoever is in the house to run out and they drove off. To be honest, that theory at this point feels no less plausible than the others to me. It would take care of the question we have around how did someone know when he would be coming home. Of course, we don't know if the murderer had an idea of when he would arrive home, but in this theory, they wouldn't be required to know when exactly he would be home. But I could argue against it by saying, wouldn't the police have noticed the home was broken into and that stuff was stolen? Unless they got in through an unlocked window and didn't have enough time to take much from the home. The other issue with this one for me is that 4 shots to Sunao's head and 3 shots to Luli seems like overkill for an attempted burglary. And it appeared to be an intentional act. It appeared it was done right when they got home. Shooting someone in the head once seems like something you'd do if you want to ensure someone dies. But to do it 4 times seems like you want to be absolutely sure they die. And would a person participating in a burglary be that brazen? But I think part of what draws me to this theory is that in November 1995, so 6 to 7 months before this, another person who worked in the UCSD neuroscience department was shot and killed outside of his home. This man was David Hessler, and he was a computer programmer who had been in the midst of developing software that would be able to image neurological cells. Now you might be thinking, why didn't you mention this earlier? Because it seems so similar. And that's because there's no known link between the 2 murders. So in David's case, he was at home with his fiance in University City, which neighbors La Jolla, when he heard a lot of noise outside. He headed out to see what was going on, only to find people breaking into his car. The men ran off, and one of the men shot David twice as they drove away, ultimately killing him. I don't think they set out that day to kill anyone, but it is what happened, and obviously unbelievably unnecessary. It took 13 years to capture the people who were responsible for his death. So I'm not bringing this up because I think the murders are connected. It more so just proves the point that this could have been a burglary gone wrong, since something like this did happen not long before the murders and it occurred in the same general area. But like I said, most people don't like this theory because of the lack of evidence that a burglary actually took place.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that it's a burglary. It just seems very personal to me. I mean, Dr. Saito was shot 4 times in the head and his 13-year-old girl was shot 2 times in the head and 1 time in the back. It's just way over the top to me. If they were trying to rob the house, they would fire maybe once or twice and just bolt. This seemed like an execution.
Right. And there's also the problem where, I keep going back to it, but it seems like someone was waiting for him. So the only scenario, the only time the burglary scenario would even make sense, I think, is in kind of what I suggested, if someone was sitting there waiting as a lookout or something. But yeah, I'm not convinced of this one either. Another theory is that Sunao got into some shady dealings that ultimately led to his demise. Most describe Sunao as being a modest man. He wasn't super flashy, but he did drive a brand new BMW at the time, and he lived in a home that cost $800,000. And I did look at this home on Zillow, and this estimate, which for anyone who's not familiar, is just Zillow's estimate of the home's market value now, they have the value estimated to be about $4.5 million today. So that just puts in perspective how expensive this was. But then again, we are talking about San Diego, where real estate is generally more expensive. It's reported that Sunao was making a $102,000 salary, which would be close to $200,000 today, or somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000. So he's making a good income in his profession, maybe not quite enough to afford that house. But if you couple his salary with Shizue coming from a well-to-do family, I can see how they could afford the home. And I'm not sure what she did for work, but that could have been a factor too. Again, there's really no evidence that we know of that this was related to financial problems he was having or that he owed someone money. And I would think they would be able to track that down if he did. And as we research these cases, we try to get to know the person as much as possible. And he really doesn't seem like an individual who'd be living way beyond his means or gambling or anything of that nature. Another theory is that this was a case of mistaken identity. Maybe someone intended to kill one individual, and they in turn killed Sunao and Luli. If this person really was lying in wait, which is how it appeared, then it seems like it would be more a case of mistaken address. You know what I mean? What if a hitman was hired and told to kill the person at Sunao's address, but they gave the wrong address and it was supposed to be someone else's house? Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because then we have to assume that whomever was actually being targeted never got murdered, because I'm sure that would have made headlines and the connection would have been made. Also, it seems like if you're going to set that up, you'd be sure to get the address right. Now that we've gone through all the theories, I can't say there's one that feels the most likely, in my opinion, because as I kept saying, there's no evidence that directly supports any one theory. I do feel fairly certain that this person was already there when Sunao and Luli arrived home. And I also suspect that the murderer or murderers were not close to him. I believe this case would be solved already if they were directly linked to him. Or at least there'd be a person of interest named. Another point I forgot to make is that because Luli was wearing his lab coat, some wonder if maybe it wasn't apparent that she was a child and that's why she was shot. It was dark out. She was 13 years old, so she could have probably passed as a short, young adult in the dark, considering she was wearing that lab coat.
Yeah, but it must have looked ridiculous on her. They must have seen that she was a child. It was his lab coat that she was wearing, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they didn't process in that moment the whole situation. Also, they could have thought, maybe she looked at them, got a good look at them, and they realized, now I would be leaving behind a witness.
That's what I'm thinking, is they saw her, she saw them, and they were like, we can't leave her.
Yeah. I mean, you're saying we. Do you think most likely multiple people were involved? Investigators have said that that's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just threw out we just kind of randomly. Thinking maybe multiple people, a driver and a shooter, right?
Yeah, definitely possible. This case was big news at the time in Japan. According to the Associated Press, Japan's tabloid press circulated rumors about Sunao and his, quote, female friends and his finances. Some have implied that his widow had something to do with the slayings, end quote. I don't put a lot of weight and tabloid press articles, and we know nothing related to his finances or relationships has been substantiated as a reason for someone to kill him. And Shuzue expressed her feelings of heartbreak from these accusations. But still, it's interesting to hear the view some people in Japan have in this case. I truly feel these murders have the potential to be solved, especially with the partial DNA profile and the gun. Right now, his loved ones have no closure, so I really hope one day justice is served and we finally know what happened. On that day, the world lost two people who were bound to make a difference, and I will be elated if this is solved one day. You'd think, with as much time and research I put into this case, I've thought about this case a lot, that I'd have a strong opinion or a strong theory about what I think happened here. But I really don't. I just feel pretty puzzled by this one. And I'd love to see resolution one day. If you have a tip, you are asked to call the SDPD Homicide Unit at 619-531-2293. For anonymous tips, you can call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. Let us know what you think about this case. We'd really love to hear it. I think cases like this really benefit from more dialogue and innovative thinking. So please feel free to share any ideas that we didn't think of in this case. That's all for now, but we'll be back next Sunday with an all new case. Bye.
Bye.